From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
We're joined this morning by Thomas Moore. He's the author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Care of the Soul, which he wrote nearly 30 years ago. It's remained one of the best-selling books in this genre. He's written 24 other books about bringing soul to personal life and culture, deepening spirituality, humanizing medicine, finding meaningful work, and doing religion in a fresh way. In his youth, he was a monk. He's been practicing depth psychotherapy for 35 years. He's joining us today to talk about his new book, Soul Therapy, The Art and Craft of Caring Conversations. Thomas Moore, welcome to The Mountain Life. It's great to have you.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
When I read the tagline of your new book, The Art and Craft of Caring Conversations, there's a calm that comes over me to know that this is what you want to coach us on doing. So many of the books are about helping ourselves. This one is about helping others. And how do we start that journey through conversation?
Well, I guess the first step is most of us, I think all of us, are called on at times. You know, a friend might call us and say, I'm going through a tough time, illness in the family or themselves or divorce or separation. You know, it's so many things that can really upset somebody and get them spinning in their life, and they need someone to help anchor them and be able to just talk to. And it's a funny thing about human beings, you know, when you can heal yourself by talking to somebody. It's such a basic idea, but you can just talk to somebody and you feel better, and you even clarify what's going on. So I think these conversations, that what I'm trying to do in this book is help people realize that you can be more sophisticated about having these conversations without having to be a professional about it, but to do it in a way that is really useful to the person you're talking to.
You know, one of the things we've experienced, especially in the last year during the pandemic, is hopefully a greater sense of empathy. Empathy seems to me a really great starting point for having the types of conversations with our friends and our family and our loved ones, or even with our coworkers. It starts from that point. And if you just think about empathy, it might help you in forming your questions or your conversation. What do you think about that?
I think that's an excellent idea. You should be answering these questions here. That's a good point. Because empathy is a heart matter. It's a matter of being connected to the heart with someone. And it means that you're going out of yourself. You're not so focused on yourself. One of the mistakes that we make when we talk to friends and relatives and coworkers this way is that we tend to immediately give advice. And that means that we are starting with our own experience and assuming that that's going to apply to the other person. But with empathy, you don't start with your own experience. You are actually trying to get into the experience of the other person. So that's a very good place to start.
I also thought it was really interesting that you used a Celtic term, anacara.
Yes.
Referring to, you know, soul friend. And I'm going to quote a movie here, Anne of Green Gables. Like a kindred spirit. Yes, I just quoted Anne of Green Gables, kindred spirit. How important is it in your research to have soul friends or kindred spirits?
Oh, it's essential. It really is important. We don't talk about it enough. We don't think about it enough that the time and the amount of your own attention that you give to a friend, to someone close to you. A lot of times it's a family member. We may not think of them as a soul friend, but I think they would be, they'd qualify. So I think it's very, very helpful to understand that when we talk about this anamkara or a soul friend, it is not just an ordinary friendship, or it's not just an ordinary encounter with someone where you just have lunch or a cup of coffee. You actually have the intention of being useful, of trying to help your friend deal with something or move along in life. Like maybe it might be about taking a job somewhere. So that would be like a life choice that's coming up for someone. And you can help a friend by supporting them emotionally and also by helping them clarify what's going on. So a lot of what I write about is how to clarify, how to help someone be clear about what's happening in their life.
I especially appreciated that's how you started your book. You started that text with, have you had a moment where a friend said, I need to talk, or can I speak with you? Or, and all of a sudden we're put into a position of a soul friend into now a counselor. And so I appreciate how your book, your text gives us the language, the framework to be a soul friend and be more empathetic. What was your reason for writing this book, other than just empowering individuals, lay people, to have that? Why, especially for you, was that important?
Well, I've been practicing as a therapist, psychotherapist, for many years. I love this work. I just love it. And I think it's terribly important. And I wish that I wish everyone could have a good experience of being with someone who can talk to them this way. We have a problem in our world that we have highly professionalized this notion of therapy. And we set a lot of rules around it and licenses. And there's a lot of anxiety among professional therapists about, you know, following all the rules and things they can do and can't do. And a very technical preparation. It's an expensive, long process to become a therapist. What I wanted to do was partly speak to therapists and deepen their work. And, you know, a human being is a complicated thing. It's not enough to learn a lot of techniques. You really have to be a philosopher in a way, and you have to have thought about what life's all about. And you have to have sorted things out for yourself. So that's at the professional level, and I'm hoping that my book helps the professional. But for the ordinary person, all of those things apply, but not in that same intense way. You know, you can do this at your own level. And I think it's real therapy, but it's not professional therapy that you do.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, our guest is Thomas Moore. He's a best-selling author, and he's been talking about soul work for decades now. Thomas, I wanted to ask you about depth psychotherapy. I think I know what psychotherapy is, but what is depth psychotherapy?
That's a good one. Well, we use the word generally to say that what we're doing here with therapy is not... it's not a technique or a set of techniques, but it is going deep into an issue that a person is experiencing. That means that your training has also got to go quite deep. And that separates it from a lot of what's going on in the name of psychotherapy today. That is, it's valuable, I think, and it can be very effective. But it doesn't go into the basic, really deep questions, you know, questions of morality and of life and death and what's the meaning of my life and what about my spirituality and my background and all of that. So the depth psychotherapist is free to explore these deeper issues. That's why it's called depth. And we don't call it something else like, I don't know, like Jungian psychology or Freudian or anything like that. I might use the word depth to make it more general, to include all the different approaches that can be made in that deeper way. But certainly Jungian, Freudian, and existential psychotherapy, all those things would be part of a kind of depth psychology.
You were a monk as a young man, and your work throughout the decades has looked at spirituality and how you tie your own religion and how you personalize your religion to do the soul work. And I think it's important because we look at secularity as maybe a way to explain away spirituality. So people say, I'm spiritual, I'm not religious. However, you tie it all together in this work, and you do it in a really great way. Why do you think that's so important?
Well, I don't think it's a good idea to be a secularist. That means that you only go by science. As important as science is, and I want to emphasize that in these days when science is being questioned, very important. But I think that that kind of life is doesn't include enough. We have to have a relationship to the mysteries. There are a lot of mysterious things about life. Like, just take marriage. You know, you meet somebody, and it's mysterious how you meet. And sometimes I ask married couples to get together and talk about how they met, and the stories are amazing. They're just, you know, they're not simple. They're very mysterious how people get together. And then they have a family. That's quite a mystery. And then illness comes along when you least expect it. That's a mysterious thing, and you have to deal with it. So I think life is full of these mysteries, and I think it takes a way of being in the world that is open to the great mysteries of life, to existence itself. And religions have done that better than anyone. I think that all the religions, though, when they become institutions, they lose something. They lose some of the heart and soul of what they're up to. And I think today a lot of people see that. They see the limitations of religion. They don't want to have anything to do with it, so they move away from it. And I think it's possible to have a very spiritual, and I would say religious in a broader sense of the word, life, even though you're secular. I'd like to get those two together. I've been doing that all my life, writing about it all my life, trying to get the secular and the sacred together.
In fact, that would be actually a key aspect, component of your text. There's a spiritual dimension that some counselors and therapists are not integrating into their work, and how important that is. And there's another author referring to soul healing as a component of that. Would you speak a little bit more about that necessary component as a aspect of therapy?
It's the spiritual life is just part of human life, whatever form it takes. It doesn't have to take the form of typical religious experience or allegiance or affiliation, anything like that. I like to quote Henry David Thoreau aloud, who said that for him, taking a bath in the river or the lake was a sacrament for him. And I think he was very sophisticated. I think he understood that what he was doing there was somehow aligned with what the religions have taught about purifying yourself in water, the baptism or something like that. And he could see that connection, but he didn't want anything to do with a religious organization. He's a pretty good model for me. But see, the thing is, he understood, he had a deep understanding of what religion is, and he could see those connections. But I think that what I do in my work, I try to encourage people to learn something about the spiritual life. A lot of people don't know much more than what they learned as children. You know, they have a very childlike approach to these issues. And yet they're very sophisticated and subtle. So I try to encourage a more sophisticated way of approaching all these things.
Do you see the general trend of psychotherapy and other modalities of therapy moving in this trend of a more, let's say, holistic or soul-oriented therapy? Or do you see that it is more formulaic and sterile, perhaps?
Well, I wouldn't go that far in splitting them. I know a lot of therapists who don't do this philosophical, spiritual, soul element in their therapy, but who are very effective in what they do, very serious. And on the other hand, you know, I've taught therapists for many years, and I know that there are many, many psychotherapists who would like to have more sophistication about the spiritual side. And they come to me sometimes, I teach them, and I know there are other teachers around who are teaching this kind of thing. On the other hand, I think that there's also a spirit in our culture today that really is proud of its secularity, of its secularism even, you know, proud not to be connected with anything to do with religion. And that it would include Henry David Thoreau, or anyone who's bringing up the spiritual side. So I think it's an interesting factor that I run into it all the time. For example, I've been speaking to doctors and medical people for many years, and I'd say I usually figure that about a quarter of them are willing to listen to me and three quarters are not. They just turn it off, and sometimes they actually confront me very dramatically sometimes to tell me that I'm totally wrong, that our future is totally secular, completely secular. Well, I don't think that's true, obviously. But I do know that there is this spirit abroad in our culture today that doesn't want anything to do with it.
We're speaking with Thomas Moore. He is the best-selling author of Care of the Soul, and many other books. He's back to talk about his new book, Soul Therapy, The Art and Craft of Caring Conversations. Thomas, you talk in your book a bit about the stories that we carry with us about how our parents have damaged us. And as we hear, if we have children and we are parents, it's certain that we are going to damage them emotionally somehow. And then how much you carry that throughout your life is maybe a choice, or maybe it involves a lot of work. But I wanted to ask you about that because it's something you specifically mention, this archetype of the parent and the child and that emotional possible damage that goes on.
Yes, it's a very complex business, kind of subtle too. You know, what you're saying there is a little bit strong. I do think in a way human beings do hurt each other and cause trouble. All of us, all our relationships have that in it. They have that element in it that's not going to be useful. You know what that's called? That's called human life. That's just the way it is. We are not perfect people ever. And what's interesting, and some therapists have said this, some of my teachers have said this, that the mistakes we make in raising children or talking to our friends or being with our spouses and our partners, and the mistakes we make sometimes are useful. They can be, they're very human because we are not perfect. And actually they can be useful because the other person then has to take in that full humanity that also involves mistakes and has to make something of it. So a child has to learn how to deal with an imperfect life. I'm not saying that parents don't sometimes really hurt and damage children, especially when they abuse them, either sexually or aggressively. If they do that, there can be real lasting lifelong damage that's done. That's something else. But I think normally all of us, you can assume, yes, if you're a parent, you're going to do some things wrong. You're not going to do everything right. But don't beat yourself up about it, because what you're teaching your children is how to be a human being. And if you can be loving and caring in the midst of all that as you make mistakes, and especially if you know you've made a mistake, that's even better, because that means you have that capacity to know more about yourself. And your children see that, and they can live with their own mistakes too then.
That's nice. Thank you for that. I also wanted to ask you on this same topic. You know, it seems that we hear about people who have defied great odds, you know, things that have happened to them in their childhood that are unfathomable. They come out the other side and they become these incredible people. They write books, they host podcasts, they talk about what's gone on in their lives, and they move to the other side and become so successful. And you think, wow, how did they do it? And then there are also people who come through life and they carry the damage that was done to them as a way to explain ongoing dysfunction, ongoing emotional issues. I always wonder what allowed, you know, one person to come through it and then the other person who carries it to justify their current status, if that makes sense.
Yes, that's not an easy question, you know, but I think what goes on there is that we are individuals. We're not all the same, and we have different backgrounds. We have different personalities, and we're made of different stuff, each of us. So we will respond in different ways. It's not black and white. There isn't just this way of responding and that way. There are all kinds of gradations in between. Some people also have good fortune. This is something we don't think about, I think, that there's such a thing in life as luck, fortune. And people in the old days, I mean, you know, centuries ago, used to talk about these things a lot. We don't talk about them much, that we have these, people come into our lives that help us deal with some of these things that we have to have with us all the time. And other people don't have those advantages. So we're all different, and we have to understand that and take what we've got and make the most of it. And I think that another thing about that is that that you have to, you really have to devote yourself in a way to your life. If you've had a really bad childhood, let's say, you have to devote yourself to constantly making progress. This is the point I wanted to, the second point I wanted to make about it, is that what I've experienced as a therapist is that this is a lifelong effort to deal with early abuse or early problems. And it's, what you do is you chip away at it, and you don't look for perfection. There's no end point. You don't say, okay, finally I'm through this. What you do is you say, well, I really made some progress this past few months about this. And that's how I feel as a therapist. I don't try to cure someone. This is your fate. You're going to have this all your life. But let's keep working at it so that it's less of a burden as you go. And I think that's what you see for the ordinary person. There may be an extraordinary person who can get past this and really make something positive about it. But for the average person, I look for a gradual diminishing of the weight of those early problems.
Is that perhaps one of the struggles both psychologists or therapists and also clients deal with, is this mentality of fix it? You know, I want to be able to fix it and move beyond it versus this progressional that we need to have.
That's one of the other modern, I'm using that word carefully, modern viewpoints that we get from medicine sometimes. Well, we have a problem, we just fix it and find someone who can get rid of the issue, or just fix it and not have to worry about it anymore. That's not the way human life is at a meaningful level. Our lives are much more complex and ongoing. And I think a lot of the issues that we have to deal with, it's difficult to realize it, but that, as I was saying a minute ago, they are with us for our whole lives. They are who we are. And what we do is try to make sense of it and find a variety of people and other kinds of sources. Sometimes it's a religious source or a spiritual source. Sometimes it's psychological. Sometimes it might be artistic. It might be traveling or meeting people. There are different ways that we can do a therapy with ourselves, you know, with ourselves. And we do it all our lives, and we are devoted to it. We are devoted to what I've called for years now, care of your soul, kind of therapeutics in relation to yourself. And it wouldn't hurt to look at some of the things you do, like deciding where to travel or where to eat, what kind of a restaurant to go to, or what kind of work to do, what kind of service you might want to do to people in your area, your community. All of those things can be seen as doing them for your goodwill and doing them for the sake of others. But at the same time, there's nothing wrong in saying, therapeutically, I need this. That's why I like this word, soul therapy, that you're going to do it therapeutically. You're actually intentionally and carefully going to do something that's going to be good for you.
That's such great feedback, to change the perspective versus fixing or resolving the internal conflict. It's, you know, how to walk that journey and recognize the impact of it on oneself, both as a client, as a recipient of therapy, but also as a therapist too, that it's the journey that we take. Would you kind of comment very briefly on just for the therapist also?
Yes, that's very important to me. I always say that doing therapy is being in therapy. Whatever you do, it first of all, it takes a lot out of you. You have to be a person worthy of this person you're talking to, that they can get something from you as a person. And if you want to do your job well, you have to confront the things that you're asking your clients to confront. And it's funny how often therapists will admit that when they're talking to somebody, they think, oh my gosh, I've got the same problem myself. What do I do with that? How can I be a therapist if I have the same problem? Well, that's the best kind of therapist, because you have to deal with this. If you can do it, you can help your client better.
The book is Soul Therapy, The Art and Craft of Caring Conversations. Our guest is Thomas Moore. Thomas, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and inspirational as well.
Thank you. It's been a really great conversation. If all the interviews were like this, I would be in bliss.
Thank you for making us feel better about ourselves. Yeah. Same to you.
That's good soul therapy.
That's right.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.